Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Stargirl Squadcast. I'm Cameron.
I'm Adiba.
And I'm Tam.
And today we are talking about the penultimate episode of Stargirl, in parentheses, season 3, because I will clown until the very end. Oh, this one has a long name, actually. Wait.
It's my favorite. I'm
going to pull it open. I'm going to pull it open. Chapter 12, The Last Will and Testament of Sylvester Pemberton.
The last will and testament of Sylvester Pemberton, which doesn't even really make sense.
Because he didn't even die.
Because not like we got the real Sylvester's will or testament.
No, I think that this was supposed to be framed as the fake Sylvester's will and testament.
Oh, because that's what happened, like, in his final
Because that's what
scene.
He say. Like, he goes, No, not at all. Huh? Like, he goes to, he tells everyone what he wants from them.
Oh,
like, throughout the episode,
so
he tells everyone what
see.
He wants from them
it's
after
the
he's
fake
gone.
Fake Sylvester's will and testament, because they all got duped.
Yes.
Carry on.
Yes. But, so...
It's this... bold of them to have told us what this title was way back, because...
They didn't tell us.
If it,
it
wasn't
was
for... Yeah, it's but true. I know it was leaked. But... And let's pretend that it wasn't leaked and they had actually told us, because at the end of the day, it's the same thing. We knew the title. If we didn't know this title, like, going into it, I'm curious how that would have changed what we were expecting from this season.
I don't know. I feel like I would have to go back to some of the stuff that we said, because we say a lot.
Yeah, we do.
We say so much on this podcast. But I feel like from basically the very beginning, we thought that he was definitely not real.
Yeah.
We didn't necessarily, I don't think we necessarily were like, he is the killer.
No.
But we were like, he's going to be a tag to Courtney.
Because remember, we did our poster analysis and how he was
we
the devil on her shoulder.
Analysis.
Yeah.
Sure. So, like, there's a lot of people out there. Like, apparently, the majority response to this was, like, shock that Sylvester was the bad guy. And I don't really, it's not... It's, like, not really on the people that I'm following on Twitter, but, like, outside of, like, that circle of people, most of the tweets and, like, all the YouTube comments on, like, all of the various videos across platforms and on the Facebook groups and whatnot, like, all of them are like, I never saw that coming. And that really makes me laugh, because I don't understand, like...
Yeah, they were dumbfounded. Now, mind you... My jaw dropped, like, 5 times just because I was, like, appalled that they had done it the way that they did in terms of direction. Not necessarily because of the twist itself, but just in their choices of conveying how they were going to demonstrate that. Like, you know, and more so, I would say, less with exactly Sylvester and more so of... the Dragon King, and it was less again of the fact that I was so stunned by his appearance and more of the fact that we had been saying this all along, and sure enough, in the final hour, basically.
I think ultimately the funnier call was the water cycle. That's the funnier call that we got. But
the second that we saw those monitors on that poster, we were like, ah.
We were like, Dragon King is
Dragon
well.
King.
I mean, yeah.
Because
for a while, that dropped out of my radar. I was like, he's not coming back after a while.
But that's why
so
my jaw dropped.
His reappearance is...
Because they did bring Dragon King in, like, from the very beginning, and we had Beth's super dramatic Dragon King moment, you know? And it's like, it's fun to see characters think that they're right, and then it's proven that they're wrong, but actually they are right, right? However, in that moment... It was so dramatic that it's like, oh, come on, it had to have been Dragon King this entire time that he was somehow involved, or else why even bother, you know? Like,
I don't know. It's, yeah. So this, the response to this twist has been interesting.
I didn't know that. I genuinely thought we were all like, oh, yeah, no, this is totally what we saw.
No, apparently not. I did too. Apparently not.
I just... Where, because there's an entire group on social media who's very convinced that this was, like we all know it was coming. But then this entire other group doesn't know.
A lot of people genuinely thought that Sylvester was a real person. Like, Sylvester was the real Sylvester. And that's why they were so angry with Sylvester, because they were saying stuff like, oh, well, Starman's not like this, and Sylvester will never treat Pat like this, and all that kind of stuff. Which I was like, well, listen, regardless of whether you think or you're angry about how Sylvester's treating Pat, from the flashbacks that we got of the real Sylvester, he had always been mean to Pat. Mm-hmm. So with that said, it's not like it's very surprising to see that Sylvester's portrayal was going to be antagonistic, right? Mm-hmm. Even if he was supposed to be quote-unquote a hero. So I think some people were shocked and maybe even a little bit upset that they hadn't actually used Sylvester as an anti-hero, which is like what they were expecting, like to see like a hero's fall from grace. Like, I think that's kind of like what they expected, and so this reveal actually subverts that entirely and goes, no, he was evil all along, it's not even the same person.
I feel like these are like general audience members, like they tune in to watch it.
Yeah,
and they leave.
Yeah, I mean, they don't know all the behind the scenes stuff, or like, you know,
that's
they don't
what I, but
that
but that's
thing.
That's what I'm saying, is that apparently it wasn't obvious to general audiences,
so which I guess is, they
I mean,
really did their
good.
Job right.
Yeah, they did.
But, like, I feel like the reason we caught on to it is because we all just, like, despise Sylvester. So we were just, like, looking for reasons to hate him.
But it was before that.
Like, it was
before that happened.
Just based off of the little poster and the trailer that we got for the season, we were able to come up with all
this. Based off of the end of season two, I was like, this is not a real man.
Because already I was like, oh, look, he says everything that the characters want to hear. Isn't that odd, right? Like, from the beginning of him saying, oh, superheroes don't need school, and Courtney was like, yay! After an entire season of Courtney needing to be in summer school. Like, hello, how is that a good role model? It's not. But, yeah. No, and I mean, like, the fact that nobody properly questioned his buried alive story from the first episode is also, like...
I know.
It's just... Like... Yeah, no, it's
Did
funny.
You check? He yells at Pat for not checking if Icicle is dead. Did
I
you
know.
Check that Sylvester's grave was actually empty? Like, it would have been actually empty, but, like, could have checked.
That would have been a funny scene that, yeah, to go and check. Like, let me just, and then, like, going to the burial grave site and then going, yep, this is a dug up grave.
And then... I think my biggest takeaway from this is not, oh, I'm shocked at this twist, but more so, I am retroactively really...
I'm amused.
Really? No. I'm not confused.
I didn't say confused. I said amused. Amused.
Oh, amused.
Yes.
Well, I'm amused at all the stuff that he did, yes, in, like, preparing for this role or whatever, which we'll get into as we talk about it. But, like, I am more so... I just think it's fun, because this entire season, the bulk of what I've been hearing is, oh my god, I hate Sylvester. And I hate Sylvester too. It was like, I do not like this man. I cannot believe how much I dislike this man. And I feel glad, ultimately, that he's the villain. Because I don't think I've ever, like, watched a television show and been like, I want this man dead. I want this, like, this has been the most that I've ever been like, he cannot survive.
He's just so obnoxious, you're exhausted
like,
of him.
He
you know?
Sucks.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
sucks so much that it, but it's like, he sucks so much awful. That I retroactively feel like he's doing a good job. You know what I mean? Like, as a villain,
I mean,
like,
he did
literally
his job. Yeah.
is so obnoxious that it's like, yeah, no, that's great. If you're still trying to portray him as a hero, which they're not, then bad, not great.
Yeah.
But because they're not, I appreciate
yeah.
it.
So in some ways, I've heard of this, and I kind of somewhat agree, maybe a little bit. I think it would have helped a little better if the audience knew just a little bit beforehand that Sylvester was not actually Sylvester, but the characters, like the other characters, didn't know. Just because people were almost going to stop, and people, I think, did stop watching just a little bit from how annoyed and exhausted that they were from Sylvester. And if we had known, like, maybe like right before or right after Infinity Inc, like maybe episode 9, I don't know, like if they had added an extra reveal at the end of episode 9 that, oh, by the way, like, Sylvester is also like
the villain. At least shady.
At least shady. At least a little bit. That would have, like, okay, at least I'm not totally, like, almost angry with what the show was doing. Because people were angry, you know?
Because it's almost the opposite problem that I have with, actually, the first season of The Flash, where they reveal that...
Too early. Reverse flashes.
It's like literally the end of the first episode.
Yeah, it's too fast.
Like, by the way, this guy is bad. Like, okay, where's the mystery in this? You took away all elements of mystery and intrigue and just said, here's bad guy.
Yeah, and especially because in episode 15 of, like, the mid-season finale for season one of The Flash, that was a really great episode, and I feel like you didn't even need that surprise scene from episode one. Like, you could have just kept the first 15 episodes leaving the people in the dark and then had that crazy, you know, like, episode 15 out of time moment and then move forward with the second half of, like, the remainder of the episodes. We could have done something like that here. I just feel like it would have given us a little bit of relief because and I know that's not planned this way, but especially because this is the last season, to have so many of the fans so angry that this one man was apparently eating up Courtney's time, you know, and we were supposed to expected to like him. We weren't expected to like him. Like, we were all not supposed to like him, but we didn't know that, like, until now. So it would have been helpful if we knew which side to root for, you know, like, a little bit sooner. And I get that it's a murder mystery, so it's not like they're going to be giving us all the answers all very early, but...
But they give you, like, hints, right? Like,
yeah.
We don't expect because
they
all
gave
the
us
answers.
So much,
we
they
expect,
gave
like,
us so
hints.
Much Director Bones hints for truly no reason that I
well,
felt
those are
like...
red herrings.
Red herrings. But I'm just... It would have been helpful to have had just a slight... more shady moments
but the thing is, while we were going through this, we were always talking about, like, this was a weird thing that
he
did.
Yes,
so I think that those are hints. Like, when he was giving bad advice to everybody, when he was like, Rick,
six.
Take the limiter off, immediately
we
were
all
like,
caught on to
that's
that.
A bad
right?
idea.
Yeah.
Why would he say that if he was, like, a good
and
person?
Beth, and even with Beth's thing, too.
And
we were,
Beth
like,
and
His story
Yolanda,
about Mary
like,
and Henry, we're like, this doesn't add up.
It doesn't make any sense. Right, so...
Fair enough.
So, I think that it's fine. It probably... There probably is a lot of merit to going back and rewatching it from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, all the way through to see whatever... What tricks he does. Because I'm sure that there are more. Like, when he goes after the Crocs in 303. Like, he definitely was trying to kill them. For whatever reason, I don't know why he tried to kill all the ISA. Like, I guess because they wouldn't go along with his plan. And so he had to get rid of the gambler and the Crocs. But like,
that's not actually clear.
Wanted,
I think we'll probably
and the shade,
find out.
He goes after the shade as well. So, like, clearly he wanted them all gone. Yeah.
But they had already established that the Ultra Humanite does hate the ISA. So it makes sense that he would attack the ISA. But we don't still know necessarily his motivations
for
that.
I mean, Jordan eventually killed the Crocs. So it's like, clearly they both wanted to do it. So, like, what?
Yeah.
I don't understand his motivations. But I guess we'll get into that when we get into it. Why don't we actually talk about the content of the episode, which starts out with a flashback decades
and I miss
ago.
Flashbacks a lot. Like, it's kind of crazy that I'm so used to episodes of Stargirl starting with a flashback that in the penultimate episode, finally we get a flashback, and I'm like, oh, don't give this to me now, because it makes me miss the fact that we used to get so many of them.
I get why they did the flashback now. And I mean, I guess that's probably the point. When the episode started and they were doing the flashback, I was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was just glad it wasn't you know what, though. Because and I were very, very concerned that because
TV Line said that the episode started with the flashback. And Tam and I were like, oh God, we're continuing the Norwegian persecution lines. Or not lines, the storylines. And so we really thought that we were going to be getting that, and we were really pissed off about it. But we also thought that maybe we would get a future flash forward, because it didn't explicitly say flashback. It said that it was taken out of time.
Yeah.
So it could have been a bunch of things. And I am kind of disappointed that we didn't get a flash forward, and I'm hoping that the finale has a flash forward, because I would like to see a little bit of them as adults. Like, that's on my wish list. But going into the actual bulk of this flashback, we see the Ultra Humanite within Dolores Winter's body, and you see that he already has these issues where, like, he gets too into the role. Like, he says that when he's accepting his award, but he also, like, as Standish comes in, he is like, I think that you're acting, I'm paraphrasing really awfully, but I think that you're acting all the time, let me see, like, the real you. And that, like, upset him. So, I mean, you could say that it was because he was on to him, but, like, also at the same time, your first thought is not going to be, your brain does not belong in this body. So, like, I don't know. I think he has this weird thing, and you see it at the end of the episode too, when he's with Pat burying him.
Yeah.
And he does get too into the roles, and he really, really does get caught up, because he's an actor.
Yeah, an actor. It's also Lesbian. Extremely interesting that Standish was saying, oh, I'm in love with you, by the way, because that is also the angle that this entire time Ultra Humanite as Sylvester has been trying to right. use of, oh, everyone loves me kind of thing. That is a whole part of the Sylvester's appeal of being, like, irresistible almost. But I think that he chooses people who attract other people on purpose to, you know, kind of brain swap with, because it makes it very easy to then be commanding or manipulative, because you already have, like, a following.
Anyway, flashback moves on. She attacks and kills Standish. She attacks him like an ape, though, but she wasn't in the ape yet, so I don't really get what that was. She, like, jumps up and is, like, beating on him. She
wants to be in.
She wants to be a monkey.
So she's, like, learning how to adjust before.
But she didn't see that it was gonna be like Bongo the gorilla or whatever.
I don't know. I feel like she was making the effort, and I for one will not judge a girl boss for girl bossing.
I agree.
A gorilla boss.
I think that he was just like, I should have been born gorilla. And
yeah.
And maybe that has been what's been motivating every single time that he brain swapped, trying to get closer and closer to that gorilla, you know, like gorilla self. So, but then when he got to the gorilla, he realized, I can't be human as this gorilla, because I gotta be a gorilla. And that posed limitations on him. And he didn't understand that gorillas are gorillas.
Like, yeah. I just think the Ultra Humanite really liked the fact that gorillas are just simply more powerful than humans. I don't think he felt like a gorilla. I don't think he really, like, cared. I just think he really liked the strength.
And you know who did care? Dragon what? King cared. Dragon yeah, King was like, King oh, care. I want to be a gorilla. He said that he was jealous. So bad.
Or, like, almost Which jealous, is what he said. Mm-hmm. But he I don't really, know why he anybody really would was want to be
jealous.
Gorilla.
He was the only reason why he said almost jealous was because he already had his funky little dragon experiment going on. So he had already had his little anamorphic situation going on.
Anamorph. Also, it's important to note that the Ultra Humanite it looked like the 40s. They didn't actually set a date, but the Ultra Humanite was talking about the JSA and not the Seven Soldiers. Dragon King was an enemy of the Seven Soldiers. Right. So that implies that the Seven Soldiers were, like, potentially sent back through the Time Tornado, which is what happens in the comic canon. They were the ones that go through the Time Tornado. The JSA have, like, a bunch of immortal things because, like, Speed Force or Lantern Ring or Nine Lives or stuff like that, which is why they're still kicking. But I guess the JSA in this one went through a time tornado as well, because
kind of has to explain it. Like, I mean, at least for Pat in himself, because Pat's just a regular dude.
Pat's just some guy.
He really is.
We're never getting that lore, and that's sad. But moving on to a happier note, and by happier, I mean the opening scene, which isn't even really that happy, Actually, I don't even remember what the content of the opening scene was. I just know that Barbara is dressed up like Paula.
I loved her outfit. She looked great.
She really does.
She looked great. I didn't like the outfit because I like her girl boss blazers and stuff all the time. So I was a little saddened that she's just in the sweats now.
She was in...
Yeah, but she's mourning in sweats. Well, I guess most people mourn in sweats. I shouldn't judge in that capacity.
Yeah, people also, grieve in different ways. She knew that a fight
was coming.
She's gonna be girl boss. I bet she's gonna fire that arrow in the fight. You bet your ass.
It's so happening. She's gonna pull a Iris West in the end of season 3.
With the gun.
With the gun. Through the forest.
I don't really think there's much to talk about that scene, though. Because we, much more importantly, cut over to Artemis, who really should be in kill mode. Like, I'm so sad that she's not. I'm hoping that she's in the finale and she does get to go a little crazy. I hope she gets to go to town. Because, like, where is the justice if she does not?
Well, exactly. I have so many different, like, hypotheticals for how the final battle can go, because we already know that, like, Artemis and Beth have, like, a kind of, like, partnership in terms of how they interact in fight scenes. So, knowing that Artemis wants to target Icicle, and we know that Rick is targeted by Icicles, because he always is, it could be that, you know, like, Beth is trying to help drag Rick out of whatever fight that he's going to end up in, and then she's going to need backup, and that's when Artemis, like kind of like in episode 9, except they're both kind of more in heightened kill modes than they were before. Like, it wasn't like they're just fighting Sophist, like they're fighting way more people, you know, so that would be interesting. But also, I just kind of just want her to take her bat and just smash somebody to pieces.
I think that the three ISA kids are going to have to take out the three big bads.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going to happen. I think that Cameron is going to be fighting with his dad for most of it, or, like, on the same side as his dad for most of it, and then there's going to be, like, some whatever, like, oh, no, my dad has been, like, gaslighting me, and then he'll switch sides. He'll say it exactly like that.
Yeah.
And then Artemis will come in with a bat, kill somebody. I don't know. Maybe she'll get to squash the Ultra Humanite's brain.
Cindy probably will. And then Cindy will kill her dad. And you know what? Again, this is a perfect time to mention the fact that Artemis, Cindy, and Cameron are a trio in the comics. Like, they do form.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that they're a trio in the comics.
They have, like, not fully.
But they're in that iteration of the Injustice Society.
Wait, were they like friends? Did they know each other?
They do.
Tam just read this comic.
I literally just did it yesterday. So that's why I'm like, yeah, but, like, let me send you the picture, okay? But what I mean is that they have gone on a mission together with the three of them. Let me
rephrase it to that. That's
a trio. Yes. So that's why I said a trio. Yes, that's a trio. Okay. See, and they were, look, and he goes, look at the girls. Like, Cameron's in the middle, and he's like, girl to my left, girl to my right, we're all evil, let's go. And then he just, like, waltzed in and attacked Courtney. See, this is Courtney getting stabbed by Cameron.
My favorite recurring thing in both this show and in the comics is every single time Courtney sees Cindy, she's like, I don't have time for you. I have outgrown you. Cindy has not won a single fight, I don't think, ever in anything.
Are you serious?
Like,
I love her.
I don't think so. I don't think so. She hasn't. She never won one really in this.
I mean, she managed to put Courtney in the hospital in episode 7.
She did, but she didn't. I wouldn't say that that was a win. I would say that was a draw.
That was a draw, yeah.
It counts in my heart. That's the most important part here.
But in the comics, I don't think she's won a single one. She, like, gets shot into a pool in the first one.
She knows how to swim.
She just thinks. See, that's the thing.
Well, yeah, she didn't drown.
She thinks that she's all that. Like, she thinks that she's leader potential for ISA, but it actually is Cameron. Like, it really is Cameron. I'm sorry.
I feel like Cameron would crumble. Wait, are we talking about show Cameron or comic Cameron?
I'm talking about comic Cameron, but also how they're setting up show Cameron to become comic Cameron. In terms of the fact that, like, if Cameron was fully dedicated to the cause, he would not screw up the way that Cindy does. Because, as we know, he can't let stuff go.
He really can't. He likes to hold a lot of grudges.
And he has weird plans in the way that Cindy has weird plans, but she doesn't think through her plans at all.
Both in the comics and the show, Cameron gets a decided win. Just saying.
He does?
Just saying. Yeah, and, well, 309, obviously. And then, there's the time in the JSA classified, 100%, they win. He's escaped from prison a couple times. That counts as wins, I think. I guess Cindy did help him break out of the prison, but he was the one being transported, and then he got out. Everybody else just kind of showed up. And I think in that one, you also... I'm not going to pull it out to confirm, but I'm pretty sure that is one of the times where Courtney is like, please leave me alone. Why are you obsessed with me? Oh, yes. Also, Artemis's hair is braided, and it's, like, braided in the style as she wears it in the comics. I think it's also how they had Paula wear it, like, in the show. But it's, like, I thought the entire time that it was in a ponytail, but it's not. It's in a braid. So I really like that about that scene. But obviously Sylvester comes in and is like, don't kill people. I will do that.
Murder which is bad. Bad.
Which I read more so as like, just does not want her in the fight because he knows that's gonna be like an extra element, I guess. I don't know if
I was thinking that was him being last in the role.
I don't think that was him being, I think it was he that was so dramatic in the fight.
Thank you.
Because it would turn the tide.
Your Sylvester impression is great.
Thank you.
That was a compliment, not an insult.
I mean, I guess that's what I thought at first too. That he was like, I can't have this child here because she's going to be extreme wild card and I don't want to have to babysit her in the middle of our special plan.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think that potentially when he started talking about college and all that kind of stuff, that maybe he slips into the... Because I feel like when he slips into the role is when he talks about how heated he is against Icicle and how he wants to kill Icicle and all that kind of stuff.
I think... I don't think it's him slipping into it. I think it's him still acting like them.
I'm curious when... we can say that that might have happened, or if the only time that actually ever happens is that one point we got in this
episode.
When
he went flying with Pat, when he, like, there's a bunch of, like, random things that he does completely by himself, unprompted, that I think I would classify.
Okay, oh, like,
but when it comes
to
character,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when he monologues to Cosmo for no reason, he cannot hear you, but yeah. And then we cut on over to Richard Tyler's house, the inside. We've gotten a single room unlocked.
And it's the bathroom.
It looks terrible. The bathroom. Just the way that it should look.
Well, it was remarkably clean for a 16-year-old boy.
Had a lot of red lights.
Like, you would think that the shower would not have been cleaned at all. Like, I don't think Rick cleans that shower.
And there's I don't even think Rick is home long enough to clean. No, he's not
home. How many
home?
Times?
Like, I think that's the thing. I think the reason why, you know, partly Beth is surprised is because I don't think, like, Rick spends all his time in the pit stop. Like, all of his time in the pit stop. So it's kind of like,
I think Rick.
Yeah.
I think Rick all season has been a little stinky.
You deserve that.
What?
You
deserve
that. But he goes to sleep in his house. I think he goes to bed there and, like, he'll use his bathroom and then literally that's it. But they might have showers in the school. Like, you know, like, it depends on how well funded their gym facilities are. And
it's
stuff
very
like
well
that.
Funded. Think about the parents of the kids that go there, the McKents, the Bermans, entire ISA. The principal was part of this murder club, too. Blue Valley has the best of the best technology, including
and
like
the
they just don't have cheerleading. They just don't have gymnastics.
They
only have
cheerleading.
Yeah,
but they cut it. They cut
because
it
because nobody
to be,
likes gymnastics other than
they,
Courtney.
They cut it to be more cookie cutter, or like they did like a poll
because
or
they
really
just
remember.
Went, oh, we don't have gymnastics, so everyone that's interested
no,
in gymnastics.
No, there was a reason.
Was
they used to have one, but it was like this algorithm said that it was not. Whatever. So I wonder how long he's been going through these withdrawals that we kind of see. Because I don't know if it, it felt to me like that was the first time that he took off the hourglass because of how he reacted. Like, he was so confused.
I don't think
I disagree. I think...
But continue.
I think it's the second.
Well, he was super, super confused about it. Like, he was, like, because, looking at, he made a kind of funny face. He's
but
like,
that's Whoa. Because symptoms of withdrawal include paranoia, anxiety, confusion. So,
you just have a list?
Yeah. So, to me, I think the way in which he was psyching himself to take it off demonstrates he knew something bad was going to happen after. So I think this was the second time. I think he might have, like, he put it on or he passed out or something, or just something bad happened to him. He came to, he was like, I need to get this off of me, but he's scared. So he's like really trying to psych himself up to take it off this now the second time. And he does it. And that's when he has like his full on attack. And, you know, when you are delirious with pain and out of your mind, you do like just have pure confusion, like it kind of like it just happens to you, you're like, what is happening to me, kind of thing. So I don't think it's happened a lot. I think it happened just maybe once before, but also
okay,
he has also felt pain with the hourglass on, not just when he takes it off, because we saw him in episode 9 have that stumbling moment and he was in pain. So, I don't know what he might have been feeling with it on as well. Like, he's still very visibly sick, like, much later on when they meet him at, like, he comes to Whitmore Dugan's house. Yeah, I think it's just, like, the level of degree of how bad, like, it's kind of like it's destroying him having it on, taking it off. Like, he loses whatever endurance that the hourglass had given him, and then he just fully, like, loses it.
But yeah, so as he's going through this, like, very dramatic, cinematic, red, blurred sequence of pain, he eventually stumbles over, he's able to get the hourglass back on him, so it eventually subsides after he washes his face a little bit, and he notices that Beth is calling him. He like looks over very dramatically at the phone and is unable to pick up. So presumably he's been noticing that she's been calling and would like to pick up, but has kind of been unwell. So he's really.
I have a few thoughts about that. In one case, I don't think she's actually leaving him voicemails. I think she's just calling him, which I'm actually surprised about.
Yeah, I think that maybe Beth is just, like, I don't leave many people voicemails. Sometimes leave voicemails, but I feel like Gen Z typically doesn't. Like, you just get a text.
Yeah.
Like, nobody picks up, you delete.
But Beth has always been, because we've seen Beth leave a voicemail in season 2. She had said, Rick, where are you? I need to talk, right? So that's where I got my assumption from, that she was leaving voicemails. But if you're just leaving
calls...
Well, maybe
she used to, and she just gave up.
She just gave up. Because he's going to hear what she has to say. Like, it's probably her message hasn't changed very much. So that is true. I would agree there. Second thing is, I think he's kind of scared to approach Beth specifically.
But we cut over to Beth in the pit stop, expressing disappointment that Rick is not picking up, and sadness, frustration, whatever, if you will. Yolanda is, like, not having it. She's like, of course he's not picking up. What are we even doing? Which, like, I do understand her anger, but also, like, calm down. We don't need this sass from you, Yolanda. This is not helping the situation.
And Yolanda has been antsy for the last like X amount of time, and it doesn't really make sense that she was like, well, I was a little wrong about Cindy, which is like your arch nemesis basically, and then with your own friend Rick, you're like, ugh, Richard, please come back. But like at the same time, she's like, yeah, but whatever, he's done this to himself, kind of attitude. Like, I don't know why Yolanda's so pressed, because she hasn't been doing anything.
I don't know. But Sylvester comes in and is like, hey,
you need to find Wally West.
Well, hold on. He's like, Courtney's not here, but she knows the plan, which I don't think she does. Either he's referring to the conversation they had last night in 311, or he's, like, totally lying about everything, and it's just for funsies, being like, yeah, Courtney knows what's up, but he says that he's gonna go after Icicle. He says that he planted a bug in the McKent house, and that he knows that, three of the four of them are going to be gone. Icicle is going to be there by himself, and he'll just jump him. To which Yolanda and Beth are both like, you're gonna die, but okay. Cool flex.
I love how Beth always picks up on, like, weird social behavior stuff like that with other people, but, like, there's so many things that she herself doesn't pick up with, like, her own. I just find it funny. But she's getting better. She's from season one to season three, in terms of her reading of other people, like, she's kind of become an expert overnight.
So Sylvester deflects and is like, you need to pick up all of our mantles, or all of these mantles of people who don't have relations. So he drops the fact that Sandy had a nephew. Sorry, Sandy is the nephew. That Sandman had a nephew. And that Al Pratt had a son. And then he starts going off and he starts mentioning, like, the Spectre needs a legacy. Mr. Terrific needs a legacy. Dr. Fate, the Flash. And Wally! Like, sorry. Well, my confusion. So Dr. Fate, the helmet can go to somebody. I understand that. And Mr. Terrific, I don't think there's anything that's, like, special. Like, I don't think there's, like, a weird artifact thing that went from Terry to Michael. So I don't think that you need one. But for the Spectre and Flash, how does he expect kids to just randomly find people of no relation to those? Like, the Spectre is, like, God. Like, how do you just... So go find God,
that's
too.
Where he's like, not doing his research properly, because he has no idea what he's talking about. But on the other hand, I feel like of all people, Beth would be able to locate someone that has the power of the Speed Force within them, or, like, predisposed to being. But, you know, so it's kind of funny. But it's also, like, you're going to tell two kids. To me, it almost sounded like, now, he was, like, saying, if you don't find other kids, you better be having babies, because you need to keep your legacies alive.
It's, yeah, like, it's weird.
It's such a weird conversation to tell two teens.
If that is what we would be getting in season four, like, come on. I love, like, we because didn't get any of that.
The,
like,
Rick
season two
would come real after 3 years of clowning a diva. After
You're
3 years, Rick
Coyle
and Wally would be an actual real-life event.
For the listener at home, Rick Coiled is what Tam sometimes calls Richard Tyler. But anyway, so would love to, if it does in fact somehow miraculously get picked up in the next, like, 48 hours, would love for that to be. So we cut on over to the young All-Stars in their new base, which is just the ISA base. And Cindy talks a little about what's going on with her. So she tells the boys that she's turning into a lizard. She explains that she was experimented on when she was a kid, and that the knives were put in her because her dad obviously did that, and that her hair is white because of that, but also she has roots. Like, very much she has roots in that scene specifically. Like, it's so, maybe cut that one out, but it's still fine that they canonically said that it's not a choice. She
personally
just does that.
I have a theory that it's like all of her hair did turn white because of.
And so she just dyes most of it?
Yeah, she just dyes everything except for the money pieces because she thinks it looks cool.
Ooh, now that would actually be interesting.
And she also gave herself like fake roots.
Okay.
To make them seem like it was a choice, but it wasn't.
Yeah, that is something that she would go to the lengths of. And that could be why she's especially sensitive about the I'm a monster, stop looking at me like I'm a monster. Mm-hmm. And like the scales of the last, you know, like the final straw.
Like, I feel like she likes to keep the white as a reminder to like not become her father, you know, because it's like, this is what happens. Like, she looks at her hair and goes like,
Well, it's this maybe like she's tricking herself. This is what happens when you're a monster. She's tricking herself into thinking, yeah, I just dyed these parts. What are you talking about? Yeah. Like, you know
she
what I mean?
She makes it look like it's a choice, but it's just there.
But so Mike is super rude to her the entire time. And eventually Jakeem decides that he's going to help her out. And when Mike is like, hold on a second, don't just randomly make a wish, Jakeem snaps at him. And so Jakeem snapping at Mike was overdue.
It was way overdue. Yes.
However, comma, Mike was kind of right in that moment. Because Jakeem is just like, I wish we find what we need. Like,
that was a very wishy-washy one, yeah. But the thing is, I think the problem is that it's all right to be wishy-washy as long as it really comes from the heart. Because that's, like, the advice that Zeke had given him. So, I think that might be it.
That's the advice that Zeke gave, but that's not the advice that the Thunderbolt gave,
No, I know. No, but Thunderbolt said, I have nothing to add. Which kind of says that he kind of gave his stamp of approval to that advice.
I feel like when Mike was making wishes, the Thunderbolt didn't technically connect with him the same way it connects with Jakeem. So when Mike made a wish, he had to be really, really specific. Because if he wasn't, the wish would go wrong. Because, like, you know, the pen wasn't meant for him. But I feel like with Jakeem, it's like the Thunderbolt just knows, you know?
I don't think that it's not meant for him. I think that it was meant for him very briefly, but he didn't get to, like, attune to it. And obviously he wished it away accidentally. So, like...
Yeah.
I think that him using it now, it's not meant for him at this stage, but I wouldn't say that it was never meant for him.
I feel like at this stage, the fact that Mike has been flip-flopping with how he treats Cindy a lot in this season, and for him to be like constantly kind of, you know, throwing shade at her, that seems more correct with the way that she had treated him last season than suck up to her kind of thing.
Yeah.
So no, I kind of prefer this dynamic a little bit better. I'm a little confused why Mike
is sassy.
Yeah, I love when he's sassy. It's hilarious. It's kind of like hearing Courtney a little bit from season one, but like it with a Mike twist, which is actually, it feels like it's funnier when it's him. Courtney season one, man. Anyways, don't have time for that. You can just listen to us complain about that from our first season. But
yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Then he teleports them away to wherever the lab is. But are they even in Blue Valley anymore? Like, I would imagine that the Dragon King is in Blue Valley still. But, like, there was no guarantee. Like, could it be possible that they're in Tennessee?
It's totally possible,
like,
I think.
Just, like, miles away from everybody else. Like, the main event is happening in one place, and they're somewhere completely else stuck because they don't know how to get home. Because whenever they wish for things, they already, I don't even know. We cut on over to Cameron in his room. Now, before we get into the contents of this scene, I do have to say that there is one thing that I cannot defend Cameron on, and that is the fact that this boy has furry art on his wall. I don't have anything to add to that.
Can we have 10 seconds of silence?
We're not going to put 10 seconds of silence. Okay, I'm going to count to three in my head, and then we'll move on. Perfect. Yeah, so he drew like a horse with boobs. I don't know.
Why are we shocked? Do that? Are we shocked?
I mean, really? I wasn't really expecting that, to be honest. He also had his room.
Can you imagine his whoever's job it was to put together that board and be like, you need to start looking stuff up on the internet.
Why do they do that?
Has Courtney ever been in his room?
No, I don't think so. But
probably on purpose.
I'm sorry. Can I just say, if you have a house like that, I do not care what your bedroom looks like. I want to see your garden, your art gallery, all the studios, your snow globe collection. I don't care what you have in your bedroom.
You're so true for that. It's not like they've been on more than 4 dates.
Right.
That would have been date 7.
I want to see the backyard.
Yeah, you're correct.
I want to see everything. I want a house tour.
He also has, like, I don't even remember, the Farmers Bureau or something, like a sign for that on his wall. And I, you should just look them up and look at some of the policies that they've apparently enacted in recent years, because like, or like lobbied for in recent years, because that's just like, why would a teenage boy have that on his wall? Like, I don't understand. Like, is that a sign that's just like laying around Nebraska? Like, where did the set dresser even find that? Like, genuinely. But moving on from that, Cameron is heartbroken that Courtney has not sent him a text back or called him back.
He's pacing a little bit too angrily for like, that.
Well, he's antsy, but it's like, what? Like, hello?
Are you confused? Why are you confused? Almost,
sequence of events. You almost killed her friend to avenge your dead father. You broke up with her and said that you never wanted to see her again. Your dead father said, oops, I'm back. You waltzed on over, was like, everything's cool, we're fine. Kissed her and then walked away without saying like anything else. Like, what? Like, we know he's delusional, but like, this is like also delusion. Cause, oh, like, yeah. What are you what? And how is that? That is not a normal thing to do. You scared the crap out of her. Like,
yes, which means I'm going to assume he's also blowing up her text. Like he's basically, he's like, oh, she hasn't responded back, which means he texted her in the first place. And I just would like to know what messages he's actually sending. Like, good morning, heart emoji. Like, could you imagine Courtney waking up the next morning? Like, oh, we're not really doing this. Like, no wonder she's ignoring that. It's so funny. And you know what? Cameron would be so mad to find out the reason why she's ignoring him is not just because she has nothing to do and she's choosing to ignore him, but it's actually because she has Rick in her house. And she's helping him.
He would be very upset. He would be very upset about that. But yeah, and then Jordan comes in and is like, oh, hey, son, how's it going? And Cameron's like, oh, I'm so sad. Sorry, I'm like not being serious at all at this point. I don't know what's wrong with me. But Jordan is basically like, we can win Courtney back over, it's fine, we just have to defeat the Ultra Humanite, we'll be totally cool, it'll be possible. Also, Paul killed by the Ultra Humanite, and Cameron's like, oh yeah, that makes sense, that's sad but makes sense. And then the scene ends, and then Cameron's not in the rest of the episode, and Jordan is in the episode but for like 2 seconds towards the end. So like, important that they included it, but like, I don't know, I felt like there was like potentially some kind of continuation, but there just was not. And so, fine, whatever.
I feel like there's several scenes of this episode that got deleted or cut.
Yes,
I would agree. Yeah,
speaking of the fact that there is a visual for Mr. Dysinger, it's a little funny that Beth, who is literally the president of Teacher Appreciation Club at the school, you know, is just like, she's not involved with any of the planning
what?
That whatsoever.
What do you say? Mr. Dysinger is missing?
However,
she didn't know that he was missing.
No, she didn't know.
Whatsoever.
But
she didn't know.
So, did she quit as teacher? Because I feel like if that, I don't know. But that aside, if she did, like, she did care because she was like, what? So she was surprised. But also, mm-hmm. she has other priorities. So that's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to nitpick that. But I feel like that's a teacher that they have at their school. Like, I feel like if this is another show, like, that had, like, high schoolers in it and their teacher was potentially murdered and it was like someone that most of them have all interacted with, like Yolanda and Courtney also interacted with Mr. Dysinger, like they've all saved his life, right? Like, I feel mm-hmm. like that should be addressed a little, like that would feel a little yeah. more heavy than oh no, this guy died. Like, no, like this guy that you all saved once is now dead or missing or something like that, right? So I feel like there's no time for that. So I guess I'm not asking for them to have showed up at that vigil or anything. Mm-hmm. But it's just a little bit awkward that it seems to be no wait for the rest of the kids in the same way that there is for Cameron.
So then Sylvester goes to Pat and blows up at Pat. First of all, he once again is like stating that Icicle is like super powerful or more powerful than before, which I don't... How did he get that information? He would not have had that information.
He was told.
So that's another.
Yeah.
By who, though? He would have to have been told by Icicle.
I know.
Right. Yeah. So I think that it's a lie. I mean, we always thought that it was a lie, but it's, I feel like he's doubling down on that lie by being like, yeah, he's so much more powerful than we thought. And then he goes off on Pat, and most of it is wrong. However, the fact that he mentioned that he put a bunch of kids in harm's way. Thank you.
Wow.
Bro, like, that's the biggest Pat complaint. And, like, granted, all the other parents that know about it are, like, pretty cool about it. So you could technically make the argument for all of them that this is a terrible thing to be doing to your child.
Yeah, which other parents are aware about.
Well, the chapels.
Yeah, the chapels.
They're hardcore rooting for it. They're like, our daughter's a superhero. But it's just the
chapels. No, it's no one else.
Yeah, no one else knows.
Yeah, so I don't really know.
Like, Rick's parents made a big effort to keep him in the dark about the legacy of being our man, all that kind of stuff. And they sent it over to Pat. So I think it's terms of, like, it is true that Pat instigated all of this in the sense that, like, he should have really honestly kept that stuff, like the staff and all that stuff, probably, you know, like at the pit stop or locked it up in a vault or something like that, you know. Otherwise we would not have this show at all, because Courtney would never discover the staff, so whatever, right. I get it. But, you know, a lot of the actions that Pat does or doesn't do literally throws kids' lives in the balance. Like we mentioned, literally Henry kind of died because Pat didn't answer his phone in that episode. And again, like, so many things happen because of Pat. And this isn't Pat hate. Like, I mean, I still like Pat. But to critique him, it is absolutely true that there are consequences for his actions, and there are real consequences for his actions, because he's putting trust in kids. And mind you, Dr. McNider himself also totally was like, yeah, this girl Beth Chapel, take up my mantle, I love that. So, you know, it's not like Pat is the only one. Like, you actually have a real JSA member, like, clapping to that. But it did need to be said, I think. Not that cruelly, and not with everything else, but still.
Sylvester walks upstairs, and Courtney is there, and Courtney starts chewing him out, and has a whole really great speech that I don't have most of it written down, but the biggest takeaway of that is she says, you're not my hero, Pat Dugan is my hero. And then she also, I didn't write this one down, but I think that she says something like, every day
I thank God every day that
my dad isn't my father, but I thank God that Pat is, something like that.
Yeah. She said she also listed all of the times that Pat had got her out of trouble. Mm-hmm. So not just saying, like, oh, he's my no, she's like, listen, he did this and this and this for me.
Yeah, no, it's and really nice.
Sylvester's really done sweet. Nothing. Sylvester, quote unquote, has done nothing for her.
Of course not. Well, he taught her how to do that one move.
That one
other
move.
Other than that.
Yeah.
And I really like her saying, Pat Dugan is my hero, and Sylvester immediately going, I need the staff. Like, he does not care.
He's he didn't care next. At all. Yeah.
And when it goes to him, I'm a little bit confused about Cosmo's moral compass.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I assume that it's because Sylvester has been spending more time with him, I'm gendering the staff again, with it than the last few times. That didn't make any sense. Sylvester has been with the staff for longer periods of time within the past month than Courtney has, because Courtney has taken a step back from being Stargirl at Sylvester's request, I'm pretty sure. So I think that he's been attuning to it more so than she has been able to, which is why it follows him more than her. And you can see there are moments where the staff does try to object. Like, there's that whole thing when he's burying Pat and the staff is reacting and he has to power it down because it's trying to react. So I think that the staff does have a moral compass, but it's to some extent controlled and, like, in tuned with whoever is wielding it. So it's going to be interesting seeing how that goes down in the junkyard next episode.
And again, there's the concept of the belief factor of how Courtney had said from the very first episode of season 3 that she was like, well, the staff belongs to you. I want to kind of respect that. I'm going to be gutted if you tell me that the staff doesn't belong for me, but she's not going to fight it. Like, she kind of said, she was like, well, if you're going to take it back, just take it back, and I'll try to figure out what I'm going to do if you do that. And by saying that, it kind of does go back to the throwback of season one of how, well, the staff just fully did not work when Courtney didn't believe that she was supposed to be Stargirl at all, right? And that's kind of, like, mm-hmm. what's happening again here is that Ultra Humanite is using Sylvester's, you know, status as Starman to manipulate Courtney into thinking once again, because he said to her, you're not worthy of it. He said straight up, you're not worthy of it. And that's, like, her trigger words, you know? So I think that's also why the staff just was like, well, I can't go to someone who doesn't believe that I'm allowed to hold it.
So around the table, that's a weird transition that I said, but Courtney is sitting at the table. Barb and Pat are with her, as are Yolanda and Beth, and they're talking about what their next step should be. And Beth is like, we need Rick. And yes. I think
she says that we need Rick. We need his help, and he needs ours. And then Pat just says, okay, go find him. Like, last season, Pat himself was like, I'm going to go help. And this season, when it comes to Rick, he's like, it's your problem, Beth. If you care that much, go ahead. I'm not going to bother, which is like, oh, okay.
I don't know what Pat's issue is, but he clearly has one. So it cuts back down to the Thunderbolt and Co. in the tunnels. I don't know why I described them as such.
I like that.
But the biggest takeaway that I had from this little scene where the Thunderbolt is explaining how they ended up directly outside of Dragon King's lair is the Thunderbolt is like, well, you wished to go to find what you need or want or something like that. Like, so it's whatever you need to do or whatever you want to happen, which makes no sense. And they're all like, elaborate. And he just goes, I really liked that. I thought that was really funny. It's also like that meme that's the guy who made Eraserhead. He's like, Eraserhead is my most spiritual film. And the interviewer that he's talking to is like, elaborate. And the guy's like, no. And once Cindy figures out that they are in front of one of her father's old labs, she's like, yeah, let's go. And she goes, let's go, idiots. But it's like such obvious ADR that it cracks me up. And then we get over to Pat, who goes back into the pit stop, and he spots Zeke, who is over Stripe, which has been completely destroyed, and Sylvester did this, and Zeke is like, this is like what you did with Mike earlier. Sylvester is just doing this to protect you. And Zeke is clearly wrong.
That's horrible.
There's like, I was so like, many no. levels. There's so many levels of reverse psychology that are going on here. I cannot believe that this worked. But because ultimately the Ultra Humanite did want Pat to go
after
to
him.
The mansion.
Yes.
But mm-hmm. there's like so many steps before we get there that I'm a little lost. Like, I'll allow it, but a little lost.
That was meant to confuse us, not to confuse Pat, although it did confuse Pat. But that was really actually to throw us off our trails because I didn't find that believable. I don't think anyone else did either. They put that in there to make us seem, oh, maybe he was just being cruel to, you know. But like, I'm sorry.
That's
like,
not true.
You're not that cruel. And like, at that point, like we said, Sylvester was so obnoxious. It was like that was it. Because this is the seventh time. I'm just pulling the number 7 out of random. But this is the seventh time now that we've had Pat be yelled at in the basement by Sylvester. It just went over and over and over again. And at this point, it's like, I'm sorry. But he's been doing this all along. And this time, he just went too far. So, no, he's not doing this to protect him, quote unquote.
He's
even
doing
if
this
Pat
is
going to get duped into thinking. He just sucks, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, the gang all are about to leave to go find Rick, and just as they open the door to go, Rick is at the door crying and is like, I need your help. Which my only reaction to that, really, upon my initial reaction or upon my initial watch, was just like, yeah, he's back. Like, I don't know. It just feels... I don't even think... He hasn't been away from them for that long. It's only been since 109. Like, that's 10, 11, 12. That's, like, not even three full episodes. But it just feels like he's been gone forever. Although, I guess there was a week break, so...
It did feel like a long time. But also, I think it's just because of the severity in which he left. And again, I was going to say, I think the reason why he went to Courtney's house might have been because... He was like, I don't want to confront Beth and her family right now. Because it's just like, how do you, you know, how do you do that? That's embarrassing. Like, not just embarrassing, but like, you know, he needs to apologize there. And I guess he's like, I can't, I just don't know what to say kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And even in the way that he says, I need help, that is not a Rick Tyler sentence. Like, Rick is
not
notoriously bad at asking for help. Because if he was... things would be a little bit different in his life. We kind of know that. So just the fact that he said it in the first place is like, that's him kind of showing us just how bad he is in of a spot right now. But also the growth of the fact that even with the hourglass on, he is capable, you know, of actually humbling himself and saying, okay, you know what? I do need help, and I need help from you guys. So, yeah, that's interesting.
So we cut over to one of the most metal... Well, I shouldn't say that. Every season, we get one metal pet Pat scene towards the end of the season.
We do.
This week had our metal Pat scene of season 3, which is him going through the house with a flamethrower. It was unnecessarily badass.
It was.
The shots that they were doing...
It was great.
The shots that they were doing were, like, super cool and, like, sweeping, and there's, like, lights that are going over his face, and it's, like, the orange
was beautiful. No, it was wonderful.
It was incredibly dramatic.
Luigi's Haunted Mansion, like, wish.
It's true. It did look like that. I first thought that he had a tube on his back, and I laughed.
If only.
But he did not.
If only.
I thought it was a callback, but it was not.
I mean, why would he be equipped with a tuba?
I don't know. I wasn't paying that much attention.
To shatter an icicle with, I guess.
Thwack.
The way that Isaac Bowen would actually kill an icicle by just shattering them with a gigantic tuba.
Blowing into it. Concussive force. But so this scene is interspersed with the young all-stars going through their little lab. So they find Dragon King's body. I'm going a little out of order, but they find Dragon King's body, and you see that the head is, like, sawed open. So clearly his brain is out, and you see that he is the one that's in the ape. And then you go over back to Pat, who has been in an argument with Sylvester where they're like, no. We're fine. We're gonna work our problems and do this together, which I think is really funny because it's so unnecessary. Like, Sylvester... The Ultra Humanite talked to Jordan and was like, listen, I know that we want to kill him, but, like, can I just, like, do this one thing one more time? I really like this character. So if you could just stay in here, I'm going to go out there. Like, I know he's going to eventually come in here. Like, there's no need for me to do this. But if you could just stay right there and I'll be right back. And like, that's what he did. Like, Jordan was not necessary for this plan whatsoever. It's so ridiculous.
I feel like...
But I kind of love it.
Sylvester and Dragon King could have pulled it off on their own. Actually, no, I don't think they could. I feel like they need a leader. Because they're both very impulsive, you know? They kind of just, like, do evil things because they want to. But Jordan is the one who actually always has a plan. Mm-hmm. So they needed him for his plan.
So, my other thing that I don't really understand is who did the surgery on Dragon King? Because if Sylvester was in California for that part of season one, like the season one finale, and Dragon King died, like, I guess he didn't die and he just crawled away into a sewer or whatever. But, like, is the Ultra Humanite able to do this surgery? Like, he had to get Dragon King to do it in the past. Like, who did that? It couldn't have been Icicle, because Icicle was, like...
Yeah, like, I don't know either.
Water.
However, maybe Dragon King just has a new Bobby Berman.
Mm. Perhaps.
Because that's his specialty of making other people do things for him.
Sylvester knocks Pat out. Pat is bleeding from the front instead of the back where he is hit.
Which, yeah.
Weird flex, but interesting. Okay. It's same energy as how Cindy's hair is cut wrong. Like, I don't know. I don't really know what's going on there, but like, sure.
It's, no. Cindy's hair, it's not only cut on the wrong side, it's also shorter.
Yeah, it is shorter. It got...
So that implies that Cindy fixed it.
She and tried then to fix it.
Cut the other side.
Yeah.
On her own.
Also, who's doing Dragon King's voice? Is it Nelson Lee or is it somebody else? Because I can't. It doesn't sound like Nelson Lee to me.
I think it's him. He came back.
Like, now that he's in the ape, is he doing the voice or is it? Because I would, no, you would think that I think if it's he came
the same
back.
Sound, I think it's the same voice actor as whoever did the ape in the, like, before. Because that wasn't.
Okay.
Him, yeah. His or voice maybe is it's so his distinct. Voice. Like, there's no way. If they were going to have Dragon King come back.
Well, they like, could have just not had him say anything.
Yeah, they could have just had like, a scary gorilla. That would have, you know, he didn't. Honestly, saying, I'm going to kill every single last one of them doesn't even sound like a Dragon King line at all.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So I was.
That's very
bit,
true, actually. I don't really.
Wait, I think it is Nelson Lee, except they just like, used auto-tune.
Well, hey, maybe wait a minute. Maybe it's fresh. However, the thing is, the body, Dragon King's body seems a little fresh. Like, are we sure that it really didn't happen, like, not literally just a few days before?
Maybe there's some weird preservatives with that lizardness. But the thing is, if he was talking about I'll kill every last one of them, maybe he's talking about the JSA and the ISA. Because Dragon King was never liked by the ISA except for Icicle. So it makes sense why he would be working with Icicle. And if Icicle wants to kill the JSA, which presumably he does, then, like, it checks out, I guess. It's weird that he said that, but, like... You needed to get that money shot for the end of 309. Even though 309 was crazy, like, I guess they really just wanted that. But, so, then we cut over to what will go down in history as the time the CW gaslit each and every person who ships Our Knight.
I'm still not over it.
So, Tam had been sending me that hashtag that still for... literally every single day for 2 weeks.
That's still been
and was
keeping
like,
me going
I'm
for 2 weeks.
I'm so excited for this scene.
I was so excited.
It didn't happen. Apparently,
it didn't happen.
Apparently, it was like presumably like used. It was like a rehearsal or like a previous blocking of the scene, but like it was never going to happen. It was never in any of the edits, according to the Stargirl after show, or according to Sean's Twitter. So I don't know.
When did he say that?
On Twitter.
He replied to a quote tweet of my tweet.
I'm deeply, deeply troubled. Because that
got
me through the 2 weeks break. I just looked at it and I was like, finally, some Our Knight meal is coming up our way. And it was and like, listen, if it was a 3 second, like, it didn't, I'd be like, oh, okay, at least we were like, you know, it didn't even happen, like, not at all. That's where it's like, and they, and not just that, it's also because they use the still of Courtney and Yolanda looking at them, and they used that to promote the episode. There were two full set photos
like
that they had gaslit us
sense.
For. It's, it, I was, and to pour salt in my wounds, after it was all over, okay, they then used that photo to advertise that episode on the official Stargirl CW Instagram page, and I was like, don't do that to me. That never happened in the episode. Why are we promoting the episode with a scene that had never happened? And then then as if that wasn't enough, Angelica Washington posted a comment under that post and said, wait, but why does Beth look like not for it? And then she said, I love you, Rick, I promise. And I was like, I can't do this. I could not do this. This one still has been haunting me like Icicle himself. Just leave me alone at this point.
Anyway, the biggest... I had two main takeaways from the scene. Number one, Rick is like, you need me to power up for this final fight. And Courtney is the one who's like, we need you healthy. Which is like, Courtney, where was this energy 48 hours
no,
ago?
No.
Right?
She wasn't.
You were not on this side.
No, she wasn't. No, she wasn't. And fine, you know, whatever. Corny is one to be, like, rallying behind common sense, though. Like, someone will say something that sounds smart, and she'll be the one to be like, yeah, absolutely. So I get it. But also, it should have been Beth to say that line.
It's true, because she's the only one that, like, cared about it. But the other thing that was driving me crazy about that scene was Beth mentions that Rex had this addiction. He had the same problem, yes. Which is like, okay. She specifically is like, Sylvester would have known because the JSA helped him work through it. But yeah. It's like, Pat would have known. So not only A, did Pat not care about this being a possibility while he was missing this entire time and Beth was explaining that, like, things are rough over there, but, like...
But I have to argue...
He told Rick that he never saw Rex abuse it.
I know.
Which is a lie.
But that's because... I think that's because they had always excluded Pat from the super, super serious important situations. Okay. So I don't think Pat knew. I think Pat, and that's the thing, that's what's damaging, is that the fact that, now you have to remember, Rick remembers the things that people say to him about his dad. Like, he does, because those are the only things he has now, right? So, like, imagine as all of this is going on, okay, if Yolanda is worried that she may not be upholding Wildcat's legacy, okay, she didn't even, like, personally know Ted Grant. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a kid who has lost his mother and father, okay? Mm-hmm. He super cares about making sure that, like, he's not absolutely fumbling this Our Man thing. And that's why he said, well, for the first time, Our Man could be kind of fun. So you already kind of get, like, a snapshot of his psyche in terms of realizing, oh, no, this is, like, he's putting a lot of pressure on himself with this whole thing. But, so... The fact that all the way back in season one, he'd been told that his father had never a day in his life had messed up with this hourglass, and now we're going on, like, day, like, seven of him continuously messing up with this hourglass, like, that is harsh, because it seems like he's totally messed up, and, like, it's because he's the screw-up, you know? And that's not true. Like, it's not true at all, and he doesn't know that, right? But on top of it, I just honestly think, because... From, again, way back in season one, we've had Rex push Pat away. Like, Rex doesn't want Pat to know what's going on in his life. Like, he just doesn't. So it kind of, I would argue that it kind of does hold up with the weird relationship between, like, Pat and Rex of not really knowing what's going on in each other's lives. Yeah. But then again, I do want to say that the whole, oh, well... His dad had went through that, and so then Sylvester would know, and all that kind of thing. It's like okay, so we need adults involved here, clearly, because now you're saying that you're dealing with addiction. And the last time, at least, I just want to congratulate the JSA, because the last time that they did something like this, they had a serious, super serious conversation, like a confrontation or an like intervention. It was with Yolanda in season two, and they. That up super, super big, because they had no adult there, and they thought that they could handle that by themselves. This time, they brought Barbara into this. So they had learned from their mistake.
Yeah, that was necessary.
And I liked that, because there's a little bit of growth there. Because Courtney had admitted, I think I messed up by not telling anybody about this. And she did. So, and Barbara made a point of saying, oh, make sure you talk to me, like, tell me it when you find Rick. So I'm glad that it was Barbara and not Pat. Because clearly Pat would not have reacted well to this.
That's how they also figure out that Sylvester is probably not Sylvester.
Yeah.
Because Sylvester would have known, as we stated.
Rick was, like, he wasn't crushed, but, like, man, like, when you see it on his face, when he's like, oh, he got tricked, right? And again, like, Rick does not trust very many people, so... It kind of sucks. And I mean, I think that's the whole point, right? Sylvester used the story of his dad to manipulate Rick into thinking, oh, well, this is something that I should do, because he complimented him. And like before he had taken out the limiter and said, oh, like you're basically, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, you're super, super smart for your age because you're figuring all this out and you haven't even gone to college yet, basically. Right. Mm-hmm. So like he's kind of comparing him to his dad, which is going to flatter Rick because he doesn't get compliments like ever. So all of that being said, Ultra Humanite really did know how to attack Rick and did it very well, and it was particularly cruel. It felt like almost Eclipso level for what they did to Rick.
I would say that it was worse than what Eclipso did to Rick.
Yeah, it was worse. It was worse.
But, so...
Yeah.
We finally... The last scene is literally 8 minutes of monologue. And, like, granted, it is a really good monologue. It's acted phenomenally. It's... There's, like... twists in it. They go through the whole thing. They're like, this is how we tricked you, audience, even though, as we stated, the squad cast did not get tricked, but they go out and there were some moments that I didn't necessarily catch, I think, maybe not, but like it's still nice to show that they were like, no, this thing, if you caught on to this thing, you would have been right. So it's like vindicating. I don't have a problem with the length of the monologue. I do have a problem with that's the last thing. Like, we don't cut back to the kids at all. Like, when you're watching this, I think it went... Maybe it didn't go to commercial. I think there was, like, 10 minutes left. And so when I saw that there was going to be 10 minutes left, I was like, oh, we're going to see status quos going into the finale. And we really did not. We saw the intervention scene that wasn't even necessarily an intervention because Rick wanted the help at that point.
And it wasn't long enough. And we still didn't get confirmation of what was going to happen, you know? Like, yeah. Yeah, no, and every episode of Stargirl always jam-packs, like, a sequence of tiny, short 30-second or, like, 45-second scenes at the end. So it made sense that we would get, like, a good idea of where everyone was at right before the end.
Right. Right,
and they didn't
but
do
we
that.
Didn't. So I kept waiting for it to come, and when it didn't come, it was frustrating me.
It was.
Now, after having watched that episode and then rewatching that, or watching the monologue in isolation, which I've done a couple times, I think it's good. But I was frustrated while watching it first time because I was like, "We have 45 minutes to wrap up this forever. Like, what is happening? Why are we spending this long on this?" However, did have a great Pat moment of Pat getting grave dirt on his face while he's like, hold on, stop it, stop it, hold on now. Love that.
Also, so was he buried enough that he couldn't move like fully and that's why, or is it because of
no, he was hogtied.
Okay. Right, that makes sense.
The other thing is you do see the Ultra Humanite getting lost a little bit in his role as Sylvester again, where there are a couple times, it's really weird. Like, where Pat is reaching out to him, and, like, there's nothing for Pat to reach out to. Sylvester is not there. But the Ultra Humanite is, like, listening to him, which is bizarre. It's like the this isn't you trope, except it literally isn't him. So I don't really...
You know what it reminded me of? It reminds me of the Winter Soldier scene of the, well, I'm just do it because I'm with you till the end of the line kind of thing, where Pat thinks that that's what there's what's going on, and it's like, but you know now, like, you know now that it's not, so it's like, don't do that, because I mean I guess he tried, but I guess it, what's funny about it is that it makes me feel bad for Pat to think that he thinks that the relationship that he had with Sylvester was on the same level as Steve and Bucky, because I'm like, oh, you were never there. Like, that was never, even with the real Sylvester I'm talking about, like, that was never what they had, like. Yeah, so I don't know. Because Sylvester's always had an ego, so he's always been self-absorbed.
Yeah.
No, like, we saw it in the first episode when he was literally on his deathbed in the middle of the forest, and he was like, someone needs to take up my mantle, not you. Someone who's cool and actually worthy, not you. Like, that is not a good person by any means.
No. So the one thing that I did want to talk about before we end is that the Ultra Humanite is like, oh, and you don't even know what Jordan's endgame is. So, that implies that Jordan somehow got them all together? Somehow?
He's the
water cycle Jordan? Like, what? Like, when? Unless the water cycle was also a lie, but we saw the water cycle in a flashback, so I don't really... Did he, like... And we saw that, like, that confuses me. But, like, what is his endgame? Like, what... He just want to kill all of them? Like, I guess he just wants to kill all of them, right? Like, that's it? But, like...
I think that his endgame is to form an ice empire with his son and basically retake over Blue Valley in the terms of, like, eliminate, like, start from scratch and build a new ISA-type team. Like, they did when they had originally thought that they had killed all of the JSA. So I guess it means eventually going to find Grundy and pulling up Grundy and, like, bringing Grundy back and having Dragon King and having, like, you know, Ultra Humanite. And then probably Cameron, so he has someone to, like, you know, basically reshape their perspective. And also probably Artemis and Cindy. Like, I feel like he just wants to totally eliminate all of the JSA. And any ISA members mm-hmm. that may be sympathetic towards the JSA. And just start over. Because that's what he keeps kind of saying.
What yeah. is he going to say to Cameron? That because, okay, if the Ultra Humanite... like the monkey
yeah.
body of the Ultra Humanite was there at in the junkyard and he was like they're on that team and we're on the other team, like I get that, but like there's no monkey in sight, so what is he going to say that's going to prompt him to just start blasting, like what?
He killed your mom to Rick about Rick to I don't know
yeah
Bannerman in the final hour.
Bannerman.
No, I don't. I have zero. No, I have literally no idea. I don't know if it's even. Maybe it has nothing to do with anything. And Cameron's just there, and he's like, "Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but I'm being forced to show up." And then suddenly he sees Rick, and the blind rage just turns on its own. That would be fun.
Wait.
So anyway, I just started blasting, absolutely. just he sees Rick and he's like, all right, time to go. Rick. But you know what would be great? If he actually didn't say Rick, he said our man. He was like, he goes, like he finds out the name and they go, Icicle.
I want him to call him
our man.
Can they please call him Icicle Jr.? Can they please, or Jr. or something?
Mm-hmm.
Like.
They should.
Something. Yolanda said the new Icicle once, and that was great. And it was like, okay, do it again. And then also, while we're here, make that boy blue. I swear to God. If this show is over, you don't. He can't not be blue in the comics at this point. I think at first he was not, and he just was like basically albino. But like now he's like forever Iceman. So like, make him blue. Damn you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. You can follow the show at Star Squadcast on Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr. You can follow me, I'm Cameron, at Ice Hour Night on Twitter, or Blue Valley Breaking News on Tumblr, although I really won't be breaking that much news anymore unless ...
I'm Adiba, and you can find me as Goat Starlight on every platform.
I'm Sam, you can follow me at Hour Nights on Tumblr, or That Killer Vibe on Instagram, or TKV Aaron Knights No Dash on Twitter. Never living that down.
Thank you again so much for listening, and we hope you have a wonderful day. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.